This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk, maybe at the gym, but you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach and see a rocket launch or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Oh, well, there you go. No effect on Marcus Harris. There is a perfect example of someone at the top of his game. He's put the previous ball out of his mind and just absolutely hammered a square drive.
And welcome back to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm your co-host, Andrew Mensel. Joining me is Paul Dennett. And today on the Cricket Unfiltered podcast, in our winter series, we have a special guest, former test opener, Marcus Harris. Heard him there just in action. Marcus, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. When I say former test opener, obviously that's just in the very short term, I'm sure we're all hoping.
Yeah, that's okay. I didn't take any offence to that.
Marcus, we're starting off all these winter series specials by asking, what your favourite cricket memory is.
Oh, geez, it's hard to narrow it down. I think looking back, probably over the last few years, I've sort of had a pretty jam-packed sort of couple of years with a few personal highlights. I know playing at WA had always been a big goal of mine to win a Sheffield Shield. So since when I moved to Victoria to finally win that first one was a huge thing for me personally to be a part of. But I think growing up as a kid, watching cricket, wanting to play for Australia, I think finally getting a baggy green was probably the biggest thing. But then to travel to England, be a part of the Ashes squad that we didn't win, but we retained the Ashes over there, which hadn't been done for a long time. So to be a part of that was probably number one on the list of special things.
Yeah, what a fantastic tour to be on. And I guess on the flip side, we're asking, what is sort of your worst cricket memory? What's the sort of toughest day you've had?
Well, probably going back to the Ashes and dropping Ben Stokes at third man in that test match. But I know at the time it sort of felt like my world was ending and everything was going to be over. But I think that was pretty tough. I think some of the tougher things I've been through are probably like things like moving away from home and moving to a different state. Like that's a big thing to do as a young guy. So that was a challenge. It definitely wasn't tough. It's been the best thing I've ever done. But I think personally as a cricketer, yeah, probably dropping that catch in the Ashes wasn't great.
Yeah, I saw you reflecting on that in Amazon's The Test. Have you watched that series?
Yeah, I watched it once. I sort of skipped through those couple of episodes at the end there, but No, I thought it was really good. They did it really well. When I first came into the test squad, they just sort of started being probably 3 or 4 months into it. So I think I was quite lucky with the time that I played for Australia. It's pretty much documented in the documentary. So it's pretty good to look back on and it'll be good to look back in the future. But Doc, the guy that filmed it all, he was really good. You sort of didn't realise he was there most of the time, which is probably half the battle with those things, actually trying to get genuine emotion out of people. So I thought he did it really well and it came out really good.
That scene where you have to back up and watch the replay of the last partnership at Headingley, that was riveting viewing. But it, you know, it must have been tough the next day having to front up to that.
Yeah, it was. It was tough. I know that night when we got home from the test, we sort of just went in the team room and had a couple of beers and just sort of were trying to work out what to do. And it sort of felt like all the wind had been knocked out of us a little bit and we weren't too sure what to do. So Jay said we'd all go for breakfast the next morning. And then lo and behold, we sat in the conference room watching the replay of the last partnership. So at the time, I think it was pretty tough. I was sitting next to Gazza and we both didn't really know what to do. But I think looking back on it in hindsight is probably the best thing to do because we dealt with it straight away. And it wasn't one of those things that we didn't deal with and, you know, didn't get over. So we, luckily enough, we dealt with that. It was tough at the time, but, you know, it's a good learning experience. And I think we showed, I think 2 days later, we went and played a game down in Derbyshire and everyone did really well. Then we played really well the next week in Manchester. So, yeah, it was a tough thing to go through, but it was one of those things where it had to be done and I think it was the right thing in the end.
How did you find the English crowds? I was there at Edgbaston, the test match where you weren't playing and the crowd was, you know, enormously loud. What was your general experience with English crowds throughout the whole tour?
Yeah, it's good. You sort of give as good as you get. They obviously cop it when they come here, so we only get as good as what we get when we go over there. But they're quite funny, the English people. So I think you take it with a grain of salt. If you take it personally, it'd probably wear you down a little bit. But I think fortunately enough, we had Davey and Smithy playing, so they took a bit of heat off most of us. But they were good. They were funny. They were having a good time. There's nothing too malicious to get said. So I enjoy the way they go about it. They've got a great ability to make 15,000 people feel like 100,000. So I know they did it headingly, but they were great. And that's what, when you watch the TV, when you watch the cricket when you're younger, it's always great to see the Barmy Army going nuts. So to be a part of it on the ground was pretty good.
And just taking you back to a previous experience in England, I noticed that when you're about 17 or 18, you played for a couple of months in the West of England Premier League for Taunton. I've often heard of young cricketers going over there and having the time of their lives, coming back 10 kilos heavier, learning how to drink beer. What was that experience like for you?
Yeah, I was really lucky. It all started with my dad when I was 15, 16, was coaching a suburban turf cricket side in Perth, Double View Kareen. And we had an overseas player coming there called Aral Supplier who played for Somerset. So we had a really good relationship with him. And then the following season when I was playing local first grade cricket in Perth for Scarborough, Craig Keyswetter came out as well, who was from Somerset. So we had some good connections down there. And then in year 12, we were lucky enough to go on a trip to England because I was in a cricket program at my school. And we went over in 2009, I think it was. We went for a month and then on the back end of that month, everyone went back to school and my old man and stepmom and me, we went down to Taunton for a couple of weeks and just made some good, went obviously caught up with Aral and Craig and met some people down the cricket club there and made some good friends. So as soon as I'd finished school that year, I went back in 2010 and it was a good experience. Obviously being 18, I'd never been away from home for too long. So that was good to go and live with a family. I didn't go that well, to be fair. I probably would average, played 10 games and averaged 25, but it was just good to be over there playing something different. Taunton's actually a really nice ground. The wicket, our ground that we played at was the Somerset second 11 ground. So it's just about the best wicket I've ever played on. And the outfield down in the west of England, the southwest, the weather's pretty good. So in summer, once it gets a bit dry, the outfield's a lot concrete. And if you hit it half all right, the things go 150 metres along the ground. So I went back in 2015 for 3 or 4 months. And that was really good. I was a bit older then and a bit more mature and that was a good experience and went really well. So that was a good time. But, yeah, I've had good fun and made some good friends that live down there.
They certainly know how to enjoy their cricket in England.
Yeah.
Up at every ground.
Yeah, have a good time.
So, you know, looking at your test career, promising start against the Indians, went to England, some really tough conditions. You didn't make the team to last summer, but, you know, for Victoria, you know, 442 runs, an average of almost 50. Are you happy with the way you bounced back from your test axing?
Yeah, it was an interesting, the whole season last season was just a bit strange, really. Obviously went to England, didn't go as well as what I wanted to go, but sort of knew that if I came into the start of last season that and started strongly, I could at least mount my case to keep my spot. I knew that was going to be tough, but that was the mindset I was going in with. And I got 100 in that first game at the Junction, but there was sort of, the wicket was crap and just a crap game. We only batted once and then played another Shield game in Perth, and then we played another game against New South Wales, only had one hit, and then we had the game against WA called off. So I'd sort of got to Christmas and I was like, I feel like I've batted like five or six times in Shield cricket here and I haven't really, like, and it's already Christmas. It just didn't feel like the season really got out of second gear. So and then obviously the season got cut short again at the end of the year. So it was just a strange year. I was happy that I still found a way to make runs. I didn't make the big runs that I would have liked, but I still sort of, you know, I was getting 50s and 60s and 100 here and there. So it was okay. It wasn't quite where I wanted to be, but yeah, like I said, it just felt like a really weird summer. Like it was just a bit all over the place. Just a bit disjointed, but that's the way it is. You got to deal with that sort of stuff. And I sort of know going forward, you know what you need to do. If you put runs on the board, that stuff sort of looks after itself. And if you don't, you leave yourself open to being left out of sight. So it's pretty simple, really.
It sounds frustrating last summer, but you must be itching to get back into it.
Yeah, we've been back training. Luckily enough, even with the lockdown, we've got an exemption to be able to train. So we just started hitting balls about 2 weeks ago. So that's been really good. But yeah, it's still a little while till the season starts. And then I think with our current situation here in Melbourne, it might be an interesting start for us again, but we'll just have to adapt and get on with it. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the season starting again.
Might be playing your home games up in Queensland or something.
Oh yeah, somewhere around there. Could be anywhere, I'm not sure.
So Marcus, why was the move across the Nullarbor so good for your batting? It really did sort of propel you to the next level, and your average took a, you know, a massive steep upward curve. Why was that?
I think it wasn't even just for my batting. I think being young, always being at home, or sort of it's a little bit of a comfort zone sort of thing, was being in Perth. I'd played six seasons at WA and it always felt like it was sort of the same thing every year. It'd sort of be two steps forward, one step back, and I could never sort of just take that leap or I'd have a really big year. And I don't think it wasn't even the fault of anyone. It was just the thing where just I needed to get into a different environment. I had a few people sort of encouraging me to go and look at that opportunity. And then it got to the point in my last year WA where I was like, you know what, I'd rather go and have a crack at playing Victoria for initially the 3 years that I'd been offered. And, you know, if I'd got to the end of that and gone, well, you know, it wasn't meant to be, but I'd be disappointed if I didn't have a crack at doing that. So I thought, bugger it, I'm going to go over there and, you know, go live by myself, look after myself and just, you know, try it in a new environment. Victoria was a very successful team. Well, we still are a very successful team at that time. So I was like, well, it's a good opportunity to go and play with some senior guys. At that time, you know, Cameron White was still there, Bobby Quiney, Andrew McDonald. Oh, he wasn't there then. David Saker was the coach. You know, Dave Hussey was around the group. Lockie Stevens was assistant coach who I'd had in WA. So it just sounded like a good opportunity. So I thought, you know, bugger it, I'm going to go over there and have a crack. So, and I think in doing that, just from things from like living by myself, looking after myself, having a cook for myself.
Independence.
I think that helped me mature. And I've found that in my batting that I've been able to work things out for myself rather than having to go to a coach and go, what do you think? Or trying to impress a coach. I just go, well, I know what I need to do. I'll go out there and prove it. And I don't need anyone to help me. I can still ask for advice, but I don't need, you know, I'd used to always rely on JL a lot to give me some advice. And he's not out there batting with you. So how's he going to help you? So I just thought it was a great opportunity. So that's probably been the main reason for it. And just having you know, everything at home is pretty good. I've got a good partner. So there's not too much to worry about when I walk out on a cricket field.
Yeah, wow.
When you first went across, you got 115 and 77 in your first Shield game for Victoria on the MCG. Was that a satisfying, pivotal moment for you?
Yeah, it was good. It was sort of a relief, sort of just to get it off my back straight away and not have to worry about making 100 for Victoria. So, yeah, that was good. It was great to play in that team. I still remember Wadey was captain. Used to hate Wadey's guts when he played against him. Just, you know what he's like. You see him on the TV, he's getting stuck in everyone and telling them what they think, and it's just a bit annoying. But and then to play with him was great. So, yeah, that was really good. That was a good game. I'd done okay against the pink ball before, nothing too much. So that was good to get 100 in that first game of that season and sort of get the ball rolling a little bit.
You know, you did so well for Victoria. You get picked for Australia. What was that moment like when you got the call from Trevor Holmes and he said you're in the team?
Oh, it was huge. I still remember being at home. Like I do sometimes without planning, I'd gone and my partner, she's from Perth, but she had been working in Brisbane, then she'd moved down to Melbourne. So we'd just started living together and I'd been promising the whole time if she moved down, I'd go and would buy a dog. So I'd just bought a dog about 3 weeks before, which was good. And we'd been at puppy preschool. So I was there and then we just got home and Trevor rang me and I'd never spoken to Cracker on the phone before. So I knew that it must've been something good. And it was just, you're just going to shock, really. It's just all your dreams coming true as a young bloke and as a young cricketer that, you know, you dream of playing for Australia, but then it's actually becoming reality. So it was just, the feeling was just like joy. And I was so keen to like ring mum and dad and let them know what's going on and ring some people that have been with me through the journey. So it was great for them as much as it was great for me. But it was, I can still remember it now. I was bloody, oh, and started almost crying. It's like, well, bloody hell, like this is actually going to become a reality now. I'm not just playing as a state cricket. I'm actually going to have the chance to, you know, play for my country.
Wow. What sort of dog is it?
He's a French bulldog. Archie, come here. He's just, come here.
You're going strong. Hey, there he is. Archie. A cutie.
Yeah, he's a maniac.
Yeah.
Cost me a fortune.
I bet.
But no, he's good.
So it sounds like a magic moment. In that series, you know, the Indian quicks are just, you know, relentless. Which of their quicks did you find, I guess, the toughest to face?
Well, I think the biggest challenge I had was in the first test was a bit of the unknown. You see the guys bowl on the TV, but that doesn't really do it justice. And in the first test, it's all the emotion of playing your first test, getting out there, getting off the mark, being out in the middle, you know, standing there going, bloody hell, there's Virat Kohli and stuff like that. You sort of get over that stuff. And then once you get into the series, you sort of appreciate how good they are. And I think with the way it's obviously a lot spoken about, but with Jasprit Bumrah, it was just how different he was. There was no real – I hadn't really faced many blokes so I've run a five steps and bowl 150. So you don't really have much of a reference point. Whereas most blokes you face, you probably face someone similar or bowl similar in, you know, any form of cricket, but I hadn't faced anyone like that. So that was a really big challenge for me.
I mean, they don't let the guys with the slingy actions go anymore. That's why. I mean, they coach it all out of them. They're sort of Jeff Thompson boomerists where the arm comes from nowhere.
Well, I think that's because they snap in half if they bowl that for too long. So
lucky.
Yeah, so I hadn't experienced anyone like him. So that's what was really tough was to sort of have a reference point of, rightio, try and work out a game plan against him. He's obviously really skillful. He troubled me a little bit with his short ball just because it was a bit hard to pick it up. So I think I went through three or four helmets in that series. But I think towards the end of the series, I sort of got a bit more, I wouldn't say comfortable, but I sort of found a way to play him. So, but he was a challenge. But then again, so is Mohammad Shami and so was Ishant Sharma. They were, at the time, they were the number one test side in the world. And you could obviously see that for a reason with the way that they bowled and the discipline that they had. I think as well, even it was lucky that Ashwin was injured after that first test. Otherwise, well, they all bowled really well, but he would have been a big challenge as well.
There ever a moment when, especially with Bumrah, where as you're saying, he comes off a few steps, there must be a feeling that, oh, this is going to be medium pace, even though you're not, you know, it's not going to be. When it does crack you in the helmet, Was it ever physically intimidating?
Oh, it's just sort of part and parcel of it. Sometimes, you face plenty of guys that bowl quick. There's no one bowls any quicker than what our big quicks bowl on the net. So, you know, you're not going to face anyone that bowls any quicker. But it's just a bit like, oh, I've probably got to find a way to play this a bit differently. Those guys a bit steeper bounce, you know, like Starkey and Joshie Hazlewood and Paddy Cummins, whereas he's sort of skidding at you. So you just got to find a way to get out of the way a bit quicker. Otherwise, you find you do get hit in the head. But, it's not intimidating, but it's just a different challenge.
And what about the shift from being a state cricketer to an international cricketer? Obviously, the summer you came in, there was so much attention on the team. How do you cope with the extra attention as now, an international cricketer?
Yeah, I think, it was a big eye-opener. The summer I came in was when the new media deal had been done. So you'd sort of go and warm up on the ground. There was every man and his dog. There was probably more media out there than what there was, you know, players and staff. So that was big enough in itself. And then I think the biggest thing with international cricket is probably just the mental drain of there's always something happening. There's always someone's talking about something. You can't stay cricket. You can go under the radar. You know, no one knows who you are. So you can sort of do whatever you want in a way. But that was the biggest challenge. And obviously everyone's really happy for you and proud for you. So everywhere you go, you've probably got mates in each state. So everyone wants to catch up with you all the time. And you don't really realise at the time. I remember the end of that Indian series. I was like, oh, bloody, I'm absolutely stuffed. Like, and it wasn't so much physically. It was more the mental sort of side of it of, you know, you play all day, which is no different to playing state cricket. But then, you know, it's really hard to switch off. You know, you look at your phone somewhere and it's always about the test side. Look, in the paper, it's about the test side. So you just didn't really get a break from it. So that was probably my biggest challenge at the start of my test career, was just trying to get used. You get used to it after a while, it's fine. But just initially, it was just the difference in attention and there's scrutiny. You understand people have got to talk about it, sell papers and speak on the radio. So there's endless analysis going on. So that was the different thing, and that's what took a little while to get used to.
And are you one of those people that, you know, reads the stuff about you or tries to sort of not read it at all?
Oh, I try to, you try to stick away from it as much as you can. In a way, you understand that there's going to be times where you just can't, get away from it. But I always remember being told as a young bloke at WA by one of, I don't know if he was our general manager or something, he goes, Harry, whatever people say about you, you're never going to be as good or as bad as what they say. So just remember that for the rest of your career. So it's easy to look at the paper when you've done well because you're not going to cop it, but it's when you haven't made any runs or you've, you know, stuffed up something that's tough. But I think I've grown to just have a thick skin and you just get on with it. At the end of the day, you got to walk out there and do your job, and if you don't do your job, you open yourself up to that. But if you do, you know, it's fine. So I know some guys get really involved in it, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of people that have an opinion on what you're doing that don't really have much of an idea about what it's like. So that's, if you chew up a lot of energy with that stuff, it can be tough.
Yeah, I guess my thing would be that if you were to just read it all and take it all on board, it could just, I don't know, just mess up your head a bit. Like if you want a clear head, sometimes you wouldn't want to read that stuff.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think you have people that you trust their opinion and you appreciate what they're saying, so it can be good feedback. Whereas if it's, you know, old mate that's sitting on his lounge has had 30 stubbies during the day and he's telling you that you're crap, you go, well, it doesn't matter. But that can sometimes be the thing that sticks in your head. So it's just, you can just eliminate it to the best of your ability, or you just try not to let it affect you too much. But if people are abusing you left, right and centre, it's probably going to get you a little bit if you keep letting it in. And I think you've seen that with a few people. So I think the easiest thing to do is probably just try and limit what you see.
Have you ever had to say, go to the extent of deleting social media apps off your phone or anything like that?
No, just like if it's during a series or whatever, I just don't go on Twitter or Facebook or anything like that. I'll still go on Instagram, but just try and stay out of the way. But then after the series, I'll go straight back on there. It doesn't really matter. It's just sort of during the game. You don't need to be sitting in your room reading that stuff in the middle of the night.
Now, we're here with Australian player Marcus Harris doing the winter series. Finally, we've got a batter on, Marcus. We've had Wes Agar, Trent Copeland, Jai Richardson, all quick. So finally we get some batting on for lift the standard of the conversation.
Yeah, they would have been insightful.
Yeah. Oh, really? And they were great. Oh, great. So, you know, what are you working on to get back into the test side? Obviously, the obvious answer is, you know, score runs. But do you have anything in particular technically you're working on, or is it just a case of keep doing what you're doing?
No, I've been working on a few little things in the nets, just little things, trying to stay a little bit more side on when I'm playing. I've been caught out a few times. It's sort of been a habit of mine throughout my whole career, is I can get caught a bit front on a little bit when I'm defending on the back foot. So just working on some little things, nothing major. And I've been working hard at my play against spin. I feel like that can help me going forward. I haven't done as well as what I've wanted to do in my white ball cricket the last few years. I found, speaking of, like, during that summer against India and Sri Lanka, I sort of played a few big bash games in between series, and it's probably the stupidest thing I've ever done because I was probably wasn't in the mental state to be playing. But I want to improve that. And I think it's a good area that I can improve in. You can, you know, as an opening batter, if you feel like you can get to the point of the spin bowls that come on, you should, really should be trying to cash in. So I've been putting some, you know, hard work into that sort of side of the game. And just sort of now, once you get to the point where you've been playing for quite a long time, you sort of know what you need to do and just sort of get yourself right. And pre-season can be a bit more enjoyable when you only got a few little things to work on and you can just tinker here and there, but nothing too major.
That's interesting about the white ball stuff, because I remember when you, you know, burst into the scorcher side and the big bash and you're, you know, opening the batting and the punchy opener. So it's kind of, you know, your red ball stuff's really developed, but I guess now you want the white ball stuff to be where you can be considered, you know, for an Aussie, you know, call up.
Yeah, just, or even just to be like a really, I think in the red ball cricket for Victoria, I've been really consistent contributor. I just want to be the same in the white ball side. So, I think, to be fair, I'd put all my eggs in my playing test cricket basket the last 2 years. So all my focus had gone onto that. And I wouldn't change that because it gave me the opportunity to play for Australia. So that worked really well. But it did hinder my white ball cricket just a little bit. Even last year, you know, we played the Ashes and we came back straight into white ball cricket. So I didn't really put any, I hadn't had the opportunity to put any work into it. Like I said, I'd put all my work into trying to play for Australia and working on my red ball stuff. So now it's good to have a couple of months now just to be able to work on and, you know, do some things of white ball cricket as well as my red ball stuff.
Beautiful. All right. Now, we're ending every podcast with asking our guests, you know, if they were in charge of cricket, you know, how would they rule on these things? First question, Marcus. If you had to rule on four-day tests, are you a fan?
No.
I just think it's one of those things where test cricket's always been 5 days, and I know people come out with the stats of saying, you know, most tests go 4 days, but where if you go to the point of going, we're only having four-day tests, how do you have the opportunity to have a game like we had in Adelaide or, you know, games in England, like where the weather is affected a lot, especially like we saw in the Ashes, you missed a lot of games are done and dusted by the time of 4 days, so... I understand if it's 4 days, people play the game a bit differently, but I just like the fact of it being 5 days, hence why it's called Test cricket.
Mm.
The number of international players that are in the Big Bash, there's been talk that has been resisted so far a bit of making it go up from 2 to 3 or even 4. How would you feel about that?
I don't think it needs to change the amount of players that come into the competition, but I think there needs to be a way to be able to pay those guys money that attracts them to come, because I know there's talk of now of being a separate salary cap for those guys that you attract the bigger talent just with the more money. The guys that play around the world in 2020 don't care where they go. They'll just go where you can get paid the most money, if you're trying to make a living of playing 2020 around the world, that's probably what you're going to do. So I think we need to find a way to be able to pay those guys, you know, probably what they're worth. But yeah, that's a challenge for administrators, not for me.
Fortunately. Now, this is going to be a tough one. Virat Kohli or Steve Smith? Who is the better batter?
Smithy's pretty amazing. I think, it's hard to split. Virat, obviously, in one-day cricket is on a different level to everyone else. But I think in test cricket, Smithy's probably just got an edge to him. I think, like, he's not too many people. If anyone else could do it in, like, in series that he had in the Ashes, probably be Virat. But yeah, it's a fine tooth comb, but I think because I'm Australian, I'll go Smithy.
And what about the best bowler that you've ever faced from Australia or elsewhere?
The best bowler I've ever faced was probably I think Bumrah, just because of how different he was, and just had never seen anything like that before. And in Australian conditions, he still found a way to challenge people, which can be hard. Our whole pace bowling attack facing them in the nets is not great. And I think, well, personally for me with the challenge, Stuart Broad was a huge challenge for me in England last year. It didn't feel like he doesn't have the intimidation or the pace factor of what some other guys do, but he sort of had the skill and a lot of people cheering and supporting him. And if anyone rides with a crowd of, you know, 20 or 30,000, it's him. So they're probably the main few guys that have been probably the biggest challenges for me.
Were you surprised that England dropped him for this first test they just played against the West Indies?
Yeah, I was surprised. I didn't, I don't know why they were, why he was not in the team. How did he go in South Africa? And I didn't really take notice of their last series, but
he did well.
I would have thought he would have played. But they seem to be tinkering with their side a lot. They don't seem quite settled yet, but who cares?
Yeah, that's right. I bet you can't wait for another crack at the Poms one day.
Yeah, it'd be good to play them out here.
Well, Marcus, thank you so much for coming on the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. It's been brilliant having you on. And, you know, best of luck getting ready for the next summer.
No worries. Thank you, guys.
That was Victorian and Australian opener Marcus Harris. Interesting chat there, Paul.
Yeah, it's great to have him on the show. It's interesting to see how the next couple of years go for him. There's a lot of competition for spots in the Australian side. It's undeniable that his record for Victoria, 51, I think he's averaging since he's been there. So you've got to respect those sort of numbers.
Spirited chap too. I always like that in a guest. Well, listeners, that's it for this edition of the Winter Series. If you can follow us on social media, we're at Oz Cricket Pod. That's AUS Cricket Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And we've got our weekly YouTube show that's on our YouTube channel, Cricket Unfiltered. So go to YouTube and find that. It is there all week for you to watch, but we do broadcast it live every Thursday at 5:30. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back soon.
Podcast Network. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.